Today is April 8th, 2015, and this is episode number 301 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, the legendary king of Knipslovakia. Knipsonistan. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay, good.
I'm the legendary king of Knipsonistan.
Is that where Chitty Chitty Bang Bang flew?
I believe so, yes.
All right.
I believe so.
And now I'm picturing you in your royal chambers walking around going, "You're my little Snooky Bear."
I haven't seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in too long.
That needs to be remedied.
It does. I'm obsessed over the show. That was my... when I was young, it was... too young to be able to watch movies over and over again, right? Which today's kids tend to do,
right? Because Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was on like once a year, every year at a certain holiday,
right? And I would always look forward to it, and I obsessed over it, and I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. Loved the song, thought the idea of a flying car was just, you know, the coolest idea ever.
Yeah,
but for some reason I haven't seen it. It's time. I'm going to fix that.
You need to fix that. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I probably buy it on the iTunes.
Oh yeah, I bet you can get it on the iTunes.
Yeah, and then I can just watch it over and over again. I can make up for all that lost time.
You can,
as a child.
Yeah,
where I'd watch the same movie six times a day.
That's just awesome. It's as it should be. And yes, it is one of the best movies of all time. It ranks right up there for me with 2001 A Space Odyssey, Apocalypse Now, The Blues Brothers. I probably need therapy, don't I?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. That's okay, though. So we all need therapy.
Yeah. You know, I guess if therapy for my my list of favorite movies is what I need, that's a lot better than some other people.
Fair enough. Now, I'm going to go with a slightly different segue. Speaking of conniption fits, as opposed to the segue we just had, but we got a little criticism.
So, word on the street is we got a little criticism.
We of course visited with our interns who are currently saving us a spot for the Apple Watch. They're in line for us
because they're troopers like that.
I mean, you know, it's possible that you can't actually wait in line for the Apple Watch, that Apple has designed this launch event differently.
But
that's absolutely not the point. And Marcel Morin wrote us, and he was very upset with this. And he said, and I quote, "Basically, I love the show." Unquote. Thanks, Marcel. That's fantastic.
Great. And that's this week's...
No. There's more.
Oh,
there's more.
Okay.
There's the part where he's mad at us.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, quote, "But I am completely appalled about all of your jokes and comments about interns. Do you realize that your country is falling apart because young people can't get real work? Rich kids make it because they can be interns and work for nothing. Most young people get blanked and have to go back home and live with their parents after university. Grow up and be more responsible. I dare you to bring up this email in your podcast. Show you have a little... testicular fortitude, and I'll respect you much more." That's what he said. Unquote.
Well, there you go.
Well, yeah. Part of what he's saying is right. There is, in the United States, there's growing abuse of the so-called internship. It's actually starting to really kind of almost approach indentured servitude.
Yeah, I would agree.
Except for the fact that when you're done with your internship, you're still not guaranteed a job or any kind of accreditation that will entitle you to a job afterwards.
Yeah, so and you may not even have money or a place to live or food.
Right. At least with indentured servitude, you not only got the job, but you were given room and board. during your indentured service.
So in that sense, an internship is far worse.
Yeah, a little more freedom, a little less security. And there is a growing abuse of the concept of an intern. You know, it's being seen as a way of getting cheap labor, especially for startups.
Yeah, and that's uncool.
It is uncool, and there are absolutely issues there. And he also mentioned the rich people, the children of rich people, can afford to be interns, which does afford at least some opportunity, whereas the kids of folks who are not rich cannot afford it. They just can't afford to take on that internship, and these are problems, but we're entertainers.
That's true.
You know, when we're writing, we're journalists. Well, okay. When we're doing
most
the podcast,
people think we're
entertainers. Yeah, it's a subjective, right. Subjective opinion. But more or less, our job here is to entertain as well as inform. And I can't accept responsibility for all the world's ills. But I do appreciate Marcel's criticism, and I appreciate the fact that he cared enough to write in about it.
Yeah, and it's great to know people are listening.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Yes.
Always. We know our download numbers. That doesn't necessarily translate into ear holes.
That's a good point. But we do know people listen, and it's nice when we get feedback so that we know people are really listening. So that's cool.
It's true. And next time, Marcel, if you ever want to criticize us, if anyone wants to criticize us, you don't need to dare us to mention it, because we will bring it up on the show.
Right. It's totally fine with me if you send us your letters and email and let us know how much Brian's bothering you.
It's true. Fair enough. It's a fair cop. We have a sponsor this week, Nitro Glass Fusion. They're
sweet.
They're a screen protector. We're going to talk about that a little bit later.
I'm excited about that.
I am very excited about that. Always excited to have a sponsor. Something that caught both of our attention in the last few days was a story over at Wired. A great story. Based in part upon interviews with Jeff Lynch. You remember Jeff Lynch?
Yes, he's the Rock'em Sock'em Robot guy that took on Steve Jobs over Flash.
Yes, and lost that argument, but ended up getting a gig.
That's true. He worked at Adobe when the whole Flash
on mobile
sucks thing was happening. Yeah, on mobile. And man, he really went to Flash's defense. And now he works at Apple.
Now he works at Apple, and he's been working on the Apple Watch.
Which, by the way, doesn't have mobile Flash.
That's true. it's true. So anyway, he's been working on the Apple Watch. He led us through the demos. For Tim Cook's media event for the Apple Watch.
Yeah, and that was really cool.
Right, so it turns out that when he showed up for work, you can do orientation later. Go work. So like,
yeah, go do your job. We'll give you the orientation.
Yeah, worry about your 401k later. And he was just thrown right into the middle of the Apple Watch project. And I find that really interesting and kind of fun. The story from Wired was pretty all encompassing. It gave us a pretty deep look into how the Apple Watch came about, some of the processes that they worked through. They talked a lot about how they reinvented the interface, you know, like they had to come up with a new, completely new way of interacting with this kind of form factor so that it made sense.
Yes.
And it's a great story. But my big takeaway from this story, the thing that really leapt out at me was that Apple Watch started because Johnny Ive and some other executives were thinking about how to free us from the tyranny of the phone.
There's a little bit of irony in that.
Yeah, because Apple created that tyranny. What we mean by that is the Apple created the, you know, the interface, the ways to interact with your device, the way for that device to deliver your information. Apple created all these things, and they did such a good job of it that many of us are in fact glued to our screens, or as I joked in an unrelated piece this week, that they had their faces mashed into the shiny.
Ooh, shiny.
And Apple created that. Apple has made a fortune from it, a vast fortune from it. And yet these Apple executives, many of whom brought us that in the first place, were thinking about how to free us from it. It's interesting.
Yeah, and it really is interesting. And I'm not surprised that Apple's doing this, because here we have a company that is always looking ahead to the next thing. And so at some point after creating the iPhone, they had to start thinking about, well, how do we make this more useful, or how do we get data in front of people's eyes more efficiently and less obtrusively?
Yeah, less obtrusively. That's the big thing there. We don't know. I mean, so we've gotten early. You did a piece this morning. So we're recording this on Wednesday, April 8th. The Apple Watch will go on show for people to go and look at it on April 10th. It's 2 days on a Friday.
Right.
But you did a piece this morning sort of looking at the early reviews that Apple arranged.
Right. Yeah. And it's clear Apple handpicked who they wanted to have early looks at the Apple Watch.
Yeah, well, duh.
Of course. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, every company should and would do that.
Of course. They would be foolish had they not.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the piece that I wrote this morning, I was kind of rounding up a lot of those early reviews, and it was interesting to see how there were there were some common threads. It took a little bit to adapt to the Apple Watch because it's a completely new interface.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that was frustrating, but people figured it out. And they said where other smartwatches, that frustration with trying to figure out how to use the device never went away. After a couple of days with Apple Watch, it does go away.
Well, that's interesting. And I say that knowing full well that it's impossible for me to have an opinion on it yet, because I have not gotten my hands on one.
It's funny you should say that, because you, Brian, you can have an opinion on anything you want.
Well, it's true, and I often do, but in this particular case,
you're reserving judgment?
I'm going to reserve judgment until I actually have the thing on my wrist.
And that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so one of the other things that was interesting was that the touch feedback, the haptic feedback,
mm-hmm.
they were the reviewers were finding that, for the most part, to be really useful because it introduced that unobtrusive way of getting notifications. So your phone isn't blinging in your pocket all the time, and instead, depending on how you have your watch set up, it's either beeping at you and then giving you the little touch vibration stuff on your wrist, or just the touch part. But it's coming across like it's a less obtrusive, at least for now, way to get those notifications. And then you can do the quick look at your wrist, and the screen lights up, let you know what it is, and drop your wrist down. The screen goes black again.
Well, it's a little deeper than that. And this is one of the things that Wired went into a lot, not a lot, that Wired went into fairly closely. And that was that quick look is just as you said. So you get a notification, you lift your phone up, the screen comes on, and you get a brief message that says something to the effect of message from Joe. Right, that was their example. If mm-hmm. you put your arm down, the screen goes dark, and that notification is gone. It's cleared. right? Your message is still somewhere, but there's not going to be a notification waiting for you saying that you have a message from Joe anymore.
It's like a really cool triage system.
It is, yeah, an automated triage system that the Apple Watch is performing for you. But if you were to hold your arm up a little bit longer, it would then display the message for you automatically, because the Apple Watch knows that you're holding your arm up because you want to see that darn message from Joe. And that ability to intelligently prioritize our data for us could be huge in terms of how we interact with all this information.
I agree. Yeah, it could be something that helps pull people out of being just completely consumed by their screen.
Right. It could.
Now, for some people, it's not going to matter. That instead of walking with their phone in their hand everywhere, they will walk with their wrist up by their face, just as I'm pantomiming here on our video show for everyone to see.
You can see through the glass.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not going to fix this for everyone, but for a lot of people, it's going to make it much easier for them to interact and respond to the information that they're getting, in a better way.
I wonder. One of the things that I was thinking about was whether or not Apple Watch will lead to an increase in the number of voice messages that we send through iMessage.
Oh, I bet you're right. I bet it will.
Because, you're walking along. You're not going to... I don't even think you can type a message on your Apple Watch. Could be wrong. I don't think you can, but I don't know for sure.
You can do the Siri sort of thing where you speak your message and then it's transcribed.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Then there'll probably definitely be an increase in that. But you can also just send a recording of your voice. Now, we got that was first showed off in iOS 8. And at the time, of course, it was assumed that that was all about the iPhone. But really, I personally am convinced that that was entirely intended for the Apple Watch.
And that would be so Apple to give us a feature like that, teach us how to use it, get us comfortable with it, and then give us the device it was really intended for. One less thing for us to learn when we get the whole new platform.
Which is not to say that voice messages from your mobile device or even from your Mac to a mobile device, it's not to say that that's not also useful and interesting, but this came about, I have no doubt, because of the Apple Watch, because you can, in fact, lift your wrist up and have Siri record your message and send it for you. It's a good thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And I bet this leads to an increase in that. It may even lead to such a thing becoming, mainstream is not the right word, but widespread. Widespread's a good word.
Yeah. Now that you're saying that, I don't know if I like it as a widespread thing, because the way I use text messaging, in many cases, it's a reference tool as well. So having the text that someone else wrote...
That's a good point.
It's really important. Okay, here's a perfect example. Let's say that I'm going to go meet my girlfriend, and she wants to know if I can bring her some drink she wants from her favorite coffee shop. If it's in a text, I can read the whole special way it's going to be made and get it right. If it's a audio clip, I have to keep playing it over and over for the barista, and hopefully they can hear it over the coffee shop noise.
True, except for the message is going to go away after 2 minutes unless you save it. But that's just nitpicking.
Oh, man. See, I would be so screwed.
Yeah, and the same thing with, like, addresses. You don't want someone to necessarily tell you the address.
Right.
You want it printed there, so not only can you look at it, but so you can tap on it and, send that address to Maps.
All right, little rabbit hole here. What would be really cool is if the Apple Watch was smart enough that when we get the little voice messages like that, and I'm telling you what my address is, if afterwards Siri says, Jeff, Brian gave you his address, would you like me to save that to a contact card?
That would be cool.
And I'd say, yes, please.
Or do you want me to display it here so you can tell?
Or would you like me to display it? Yes.
Yeah, I kind of don't think
do you want me to get directions?
Right. Oh, there you go.
I could display it in maps for you, Jeff.
Yes.
Yes, Siri.
That will eventually come. May not be in this first version. But that will eventually come because that's is such a, you know, now that we've said it, it's such an obvious.
Yeah. I hope that comes. All right. So as long as I'm in my little rabbit hole here, here's another thing that I want to see. So, you know, one of the fitness features of Apple Watch is that it will let you know if you've been sitting for an hour. And
right.
And it lets you know it's time to get up and move around.
Or what I call Tuesday.
Or what you call Tuesday. Okay, so let's say that I go to see the premiere of the latest Avengers movie. It's me and 150 other people in the theater. 30 of us have Apple Watches. We're all sitting down at pretty much the same time. An hour into the movie, all of our watches let us know it's time to get up and walk around. I want to have a proximity feature in there that's context aware, so it knows if I go into a theater that it shouldn't give me that get up in an hour alert.
Oh, that's a good thing. It's a good, yeah. Oh, that's going to be interesting. You know, so this kind of comes back to what was supposed to be the topic of this segment, which is Apple is trying to free us from the tyranny of our phones and give us new ways of interacting with that information. And we don't yet know how we're going to adapt either ourselves or the information to this device. But I expect that adaptation will take place.
Well, of course. The adaptation is going to come because people will use the device and they figure out how they want to use it. There you go. But that brings up another interesting thing. There's a lot of people that are looking at Apple Watch right now that that know they want it, and they don't know how they're going to use it.
Yes. Kind of like the iPad.
Yeah, kind of like the iPad. And they'll get it, and because it's just an open slate for them, they're going in without any preconceived notions, they're going to find really interesting ways to fit this into their lives.
Yes. You know, it's interesting you say that, because the iPhone had a different trajectory from the iPad. And I think that Apple Watch's trajectory will be a little bit closer to iPads. And here's what I mean by that. When iPhone was introduced, the selling point was an internet-connected phone. Mm-hmm. Right? We had visual voicemail. That was like, oh my God, that's cool.
Still is, but yes.
It still is. But at that time, it was novel. We had a browser so that we could look up stuff on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a phone.
And a music player.
And a music player, too. Right. And those were the selling points. That's why we all knew we wanted this thing. We you know, the App Store didn't exist yet. You know, that's the App Store made iPhone huge, but it's not what put iPhone on the map. The instant you're kidding me. I can have an internet connected device in my pocket where I can browse the web and make my phone calls, and the interface isn't awful. Right, you know, I can text. You know, that was the selling point, and it made sense.
Sign me up.
Most people, well, I'm not gonna say most people. A lot of people grokked it. iPad was a lot different. I remember I spoke about the iPad in the months after it was announced, before it was released.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to two different user groups about it, and I very specifically remember making the case that we don't yet know how we're going to use this thing, but that we will find ways to use this thing, because people were saying, like, I want one of those things, and people would say, well, why? And I don't know.
But sometimes the answer was, I don't know.
A lot of times the answer was, I don't know. It was the case for me. I wanted one. I didn't know what I was going to use it for, but I knew I was going to use it for something.
Now, see, and I knew right away what it was for me. So I saw the iPad and I went, that's my portable office right there.
Yeah, all right. Makes sense.
Yeah. But for a lot of people, they had no idea. Now, I say I knew what it was. It was my portable office. I didn't know how it was going to be my portable office, but I knew that's what it would be. And
right. And this, yeah, is, of course, was after we already knew that the App Store was going to exist, too.
Right.
Right. So there are lots of differences between the iPhone and the iPad, but their trajectories were very different. And I think that's going to be the case for Apple Watch 2. I think that a lot of people don't yet know how they're going to use this device and, you know, what ways this device is going to fit into their lives. But there are a lot of people who want it anyway.
Oh, yeah. And I know ways it will fit into my life. I don't know how yet. Like, I know this is going to become part of my health and fitness management. But I don't know how it's going to do that yet. And I'm not talking from a technical standpoint. I mean from a real-world use standpoint.
Right.
And how is this going to work for me as my alternate interface to my iPhone? And I don't know. But I do know the first app that I want to try once I get my Apple Watch is OmniFocus.
Okay, explain that.
Okay, so OmniFocus is going to have Apple Watch support. Well, it'll have Apple Watch support. And for those of you that don't know what OmniFocus is, it's a really powerful task management application that's available on the Mac, the iPhone, and the iPad. And so I'll have access to my task lists on my Apple Watch.
And, all right, that makes sense.
And since OmniFocus can also do geofencing, I can have tasks that I need to work on just popping up on my wrist for me as little reminders, just based on where I go.
Right.
And I'm thinking that's going to be really powerful.
That should, of course. Okay, that makes sense. I'm not going to argue or even question that.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't do you any good because it's no secret. I'm a pretty hardcore OmniFocus
you
fan.
You are, in fact, a big fan of the OmniFocus.
Yes, I am.
All right, so trajectory is going to be a little bit different. And from the iPhone, it's going to be a lot closer to the iPad, I think. I still am fascinated by the idea that Johnny Ive and some other Apple executives and some of his top designers were interested in freeing us from the tyranny of the iPhone. Let's just call it the iPhone instead of the phone. And that they created that tyranny. And this is just one of those examples of why Apple is so exceptional, because other companies would be focused entirely and precisely on increasing our addiction and engagement, not decrease their cash cow, not decreasing.
Okay. And yet here's Apple that's coming up with Apple Watch. Now in the beginning, it's not going to decrease the cash cow because you have to have an iPhone before you get an Apple Watch. But my guess is at some point that will change.
It'll change to some degree at some point, for sure. But the reality is that most other companies would be too scared to even contemplate it. They would never ever think about moving on to the next thing. They would be focused on milking the cash cow for every penny that they can get.
And then once that cash cow has been thoroughly killed, then they figure out what they're doing next.
Yeah.
And maybe. My guess, maybe. And my guess is that somewhere in a secret dark lab hidden away in Cupertino, Apple is working on stuff so they can free us from the tyranny of our wrist.
It's true. There is no doubt of that.
Yeah, I think Apple Watch is the first of Apple's wearables. And I think whatever they bring to the wearable market, it's going to be a pretty varied selection. So watches, but then maybe we'll have clothing items that are smart.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. There will be other things we wear that Apple comes up with besides a wristwatch.
You know, I wonder if Apple is capable of taking us to ocular implants or even contact lenses that can do they could do a better job of what Google is trying to do with Google Glass.
Well, John Martellaro thinks that that smart contacts are the way of the future.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and until and when we can interface directly with our brains and just have our brains,
and we just jack in.
Yeah. Until that's obvious. So either civilization ends or we have things that we apply to our eyes, or we jack straight into the circuitry of our brain. I mean, you know, those three things are certainties. One of those three things.
There you go, kids. Brain just told you the future.
Mm-hmm. It's true. All right. So here we are, 2 days from now, Apple Watch is going to be released. Mm-hmm. You've been making this song and dance about, Apple's got to convince me where my watch. I don't know if I want to wear an Apple Watch. And, oh, my God, I've never worn a watch. I don't want to wear a watch. So, right?
I had no idea you were actually recording the conversations.
We've been hearing this from you for weeks now, months now.
Yep.
Months now. And
whiny Jeff.
What was the piece you wrote this week?
I can't remember the exact title of it, but it was Apple has to earn a place on my wrist.
Apple has to earn a place on my wrist because I'm precious.
No, I'm dainty.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I'm such a jerk sometimes. So,
that's all right. I know where you live.
You've been making this noise, but I know you're going to get one. And of course you're going to get one because it's our job. I mean, you know, we have to be able to talk about this stuff and write about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what are you going to get?
I'm going to get a 38 millimeter black sport.
38 millimeter black sport. And that, mm-hmm. is that the aluminum that has a blackened interface?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to get, and I still want the stainless steel model. I really want the stainless steel with a Milanese loop, but as Dave so very rightly pointed out, we're going to be upgrading this thing. We're going to have to get the next version for the same reason that we have to have this version.
Of course. So you can go with the silver sport in the 42 millimeter, and then if you want, put a Milanese loop on it.
I probably won't. You know, I mean, I probably won't spend the money on the Milanese loop. But here's my deal. I'm actually worried. This may blow your mind. Dave and I were talking about this.
All right, I'm sitting
after our morning meeting today. Dave and I were having a private conversation, and actually concerned that the Apple Watch Sport is going to be too light.
Fascinating. Now, for you to say that, I'm not overly surprised. If I were to say that, I think it would be a big surprise. But see, you like watches, and you like the really cool watches. I mean, your Zenith, I think it looks really neat, and I think it looks awesome on you. But that's a big watch, and it has some heft to it. And if the Apple Watch Sport weighs substantially less than what you're used to, I can see where that could be an issue for you.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, and this is sheer conjecture at this point, you know, sheer first world problems to boot. When I'm in my home office, I tend not to wear a watch. And I don't really think about it all that much. But the second I walk out the door, if I don't have my watch on, I feel naked. I mean, like, it bothers me. I'm very, very aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, you know, I do wonder whether or not, and Dave actually has several watches. I've got my one watch that I love. Dave owns several watches, and he was talking about the fact that his favorites are all the heavy ones, that the lightest watches he has are not his favorites. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Apple Watch Sport does it for me. But I'm going to be ordering the Apple Watch Sport. I'm going to get the one with the black band, but I think I'm going to get the silver finish, not the black finish.
Okay.
And all of that said, the context is that I firmly believe no one should order an Apple Watch until they can go down to an Apple store and try it on.
And yet I'm the guy that hasn't owned a watch in over 20 years is going to be up at midnight Pacific time on Friday ordering one.
Yeah, but we have to, because our job is to write about these things.
Yeah. So you, dear listeners, if you can wait before ordering and try one on first, that would be a smart thing to do.
Yeah, because not only the size, but each band is going to feel very different,
right?
And it's going to be incredibly subjective as to which one feels right on you. And the size is going to be very different and subjective to everybody. And the finish, some people are going to prefer one finish or the other, be it the difference between the Apple Watch Sport or the Apple Watch, the stainless steel version, or, you know, if
the edition,
if you're very wealthy and you're going to get the gold one, which version of that you want. So
I have to go back to the weight thing for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm getting why you want to have that heft. And as we've been sitting here talking, I've realized I want the watch to weigh as little as it possibly can.
Yeah, it's very subjective.
Yeah, and for me, I'm looking at this as something that's going to be used with a lot of outdoor activities. I'm going to be biking with it. I'm going to be hiking, and I've spent so many years just refining the gear that I have for hiking and backpacking to trim down weight every place I can. I don't want to start adding it back in. So if they could make the Apple Watch, you know, like if money was no object, I want it made out of titanium so that it's even lighter.
Yeah, fair enough. And the Apple Watch Sport should be light.
It's an aluminum watch, so it's going. Yeah, the body's aluminum, so it's going to weigh less.
No, but I mean, but I'm saying that they should be making out of a material that makes it weigh less. Be it titanium, be it aluminum, be it something, be it, I could even see a carbon one at some point, a carbon fiber one in the future.
Oh, sure.
But the point is that the one that's aimed at fitness and activity should, in fact, be light. I'm not pre-criticizing the Apple Watch Sport for being light. I'm just saying that I do worry that it won't feel as good to me on my wrist because I do like the heft. That's all. Yep, that's all I'm saying.
And I totally get that.
And I mean, for that reason, all things being equal, I should get the Apple Watch, the stainless steel version. That's the one I want to wear, and that's the one that I should get. But that,
maybe version two will be stainless.
$200 is $200.
It is,
and I'm gonna replace it a year.
Yeah, well, we're assuming Apple's going to upgrade or come up with new models in a year, and it seems pretty reasonable.
It does seem pretty reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, so a year from now, we'll be talking about which models we're getting again.
Right. So I'm probably going to end up getting the silver version with the black sport band, and then I will be liberally trying out all of the watch bands that third party accessory makers send to us.
Yeah, and I'm betting there will be a lot of bands for us to try.
Yes, there probably will be. All right, Z Nitro.
Hey, I know those guys.
Yeah, they Clear Protector is the company. They one of their products is the Z Nitro brand. And one of the Z Nitro brand products is the Nitro Glass Fusion. It's this clear protector, hence the, you know, clear protector, the name. Mm-hmm.
It's clear glass protector.
It's a glass protector for your iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 Plus. And the Fusion, they have several models, but the Fusion is the one we're talking about today. It has fused into the glass aluminum on the where your iPhone's borders are. So at the top and the bottom.
Right. And around the sides, too.
And around the sides. And it does edge-to-edge protection with a glass texture, which is, you know, those film protectors, time and place for them. A lot of people love them. A lot of people love them, but mm-hmm. a lot of people mm-hmm. prefer the to actually interact with the glass surface. And that's what the Nitro Glass Fusion brings to the table. It's edge-to-edge protection. It's got this aluminum that is fused along the edges so that it looks natural sitting on your iPhone.
Yeah, it actually looks like it's part of your iPhone. When I put one on mine, mm-hmm. I was really impressed with how it looked. I mean, it curves on the edges so it follows that natural curvature of the iPhone 6 body. Mm-hmm. And it blends in so well. People that I showed this to didn't realize that I had put a screen protector on my iPhone.
And I remember you also, you kept saying that you kind of like the silver rings.
Yes. Yeah. So I have the black matte cover or protector, but where it's been cut out for the sensors and the speakers and the home button, the metal of the aluminum is showing.
Right.
So you see that silver in the bezel that cuts in.
It looks kind of cool.
It looks cool. I really like how it looks. And I was really impressed with how smooth it is where the glass and the metal come together. The only way that I could tell that my finger had moved from glass to metal is because the metal part has a very slight texture, very subtle texture to it. I couldn't feel where the glass ended, but I could feel when I was on the texture.
Hmm.
I mean, that's the level of precision that they have here.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's really good stuff. So it's got an easy peel and stick application. The glass, it's a tempered glass, and it is fused with this aluminum right into the frame. You can get it in black, silver, or gold. It's available for the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. And these guys are sponsoring us. We would like it if you would check them out. Now, you can do so right at... because I'm a professional here, znitro.com, znitro.com.
Yeah, go check out the Fusion screen protector. It looks really nice.
Yeah, definitely check it out. We appreciate their sponsorship. All right, so I know we had a third topic. God, we are so good at this. Oh, the Photos app.
Oh, right, the Photos app. You know, it's funny. I still have my notes from recording daily observations this morning, and I looked down and I was about to read off one of the topics from there and say, "Oh, well, this was it." But no.
Yeah. Photos app. Photos. Came out today, finally.
Yes. OS 10 Yosemite 10.10.3 was released, and it includes a new Photos app which replaces iPhoto. If you're an iPhoto user, it's a little bit different, but it's also kind of familiar. And so at first you might be a little off-put just because it's not what you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. But I think for iPhoto users, this is going to be a nice transition. I think that it's going to ultimately work much better for you than iPhoto. And I do like that in this case we have a somewhat unified interface. Because Photos started its life on the iPhone and iPad.
Right.
So if you're familiar with using the Photos app there, you already know how to use it on your Mac.
Okay.
But I mean, the organization that it has, it's a little bit different, but it's familiar. When you see your albums, you're like, yep, those are my albums. In one way... And I know this comes with a negative connotation when I say it, but that's not how I mean it. In one way, it's kind of like they took iTunes and turned it into a Photos app. I mean, there's a lot of familiarity with the interface for Photos on the Mac and iTunes.
I'm not. I'm not sure I like that.
So keep an open mind. Because in this sense, it actually works well.
Okay.
I offered that comparison with trepidation because I know I'm a very outspoken advocate for burning iTunes in a fire.
Uh-huh.
And yet I'm saying, oh, it's kind of like iTunes. There are some visual similarities, but they work. And yeah, so overall, I'm actually pleased with the Photos app. And at first I was like, oh crap, this is just iTunes for pictures. But that's not the case.
Well, how do you think it compares to Aperture?
If you are a serious Aperture user, you will be disappointed, because there are so many features that you're probably using all the time in Aperture that aren't available in Photos. Now, over time, could change.
Have you used Aperture?
No, but I've used Lightroom.
Okay. All right. So this is great. This is up to our usual standard, because you haven't used Aperture and I haven't used the new Photos app. So it's a good thing that we're spouting off some opinions about this stuff.
Right. Yeah. I thought we established at the beginning of the show that we are professionals, entertainers. We're entertainers.
Right. Entertainers. Yeah. That's that's the case. All right. Because I'm an Aperture user.
And if you really like Aperture, what I would recommend is take a fistful of photos, toss them into the Photos app,
mm-hmm.
and play with them, and just see and just see what you think.
Well, I'm actually going to import my entire library. But so the way Photos works, it'll import your existing iPhoto and or Aperture library, but it doesn't modify your Aperture library. So your Aperture library will still be there untouched as it was.
All right. Well,
and so I'm going to import the entire thing just to play with it. And then I'll start complaining about how Apple's kind of dropped the ball for professional
how it's
users.
So anemic and
yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you will do. I think professional users that have been relying on Aperture will not be happy with Photos.
Right. Hopefully Apple will narrow that gap. That's kind of what Apple's done. Every time they've reinvented one of their creative apps, they've always released it, and it's left in particular the professional users kind of out in the cold, and then they've eventually fixed that. So I'm hoping that that's going to be the case here too.
Well, I hope so. No, but the smart thing they did was to rename the application. They learned that lesson. Had they called this iPhoto 15 or you know,
that's a good point.
As in 2015, that would have been a disaster, because everyone would have looked at this and said, oh, okay, so they gave iPhoto a lobotomy and turned it into iTunes. You suck, Apple.
Right.
But by calling it Photos, they've told us this is a new application.
Right.
And we're starting from the bottom and working up. So that's good. The expectation's been set, and I think Photos is going to be a good thing. You know, maybe what Apple needs to do is make an add-on module for professional users, and so it's like an in-app purchase that turns it into Photos Pro.
Pro is what Apple needs to do.
If having all the pro features in Photos, I think would be a bad idea, because I don't want to have to explain to my dad every time he launches Photos why he can't figure out how to do something, because all the pro features are mixed in.
Right. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. But Apple hasn't announced any such plans.
Right. So if they don't do anything, well, there you go. Aperture users, I hope you enjoy Lightroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Make the transition.
Exactly.
Because that's exactly what you will do.
Which is kind of a drag. I don't want to become more heavily invested in Adobe. I like Aperture. I like Aperture, man. I like Aperture. It's a good piece of software. And that's the thing. Aperture has gotten love. I don't know that it's gotten enough love, but it has gotten love over the years. So it's so strange to me that the creatives at Apple are all using Aperture. So, you know,
I would like to think they are.
Why wouldn't they take care of their Aperture users?
Yeah, I don't know. It's Well, okay, so the reason that I see for not taking care of your Aperture users is that Aperture doesn't sell enough to be worth the money that Apple has to invest into it.
Yeah, it's probably the case. But at the same time, it's very true that a lot of the investments in Aperture have played a role in iPhoto and as well as Photos, right? So it's not like it's not a cut and dry, we don't sell enough copies of Aperture, because so much of what goes into Aperture does go into the consumer side too.
That's true. Yeah. And okay, to play devil's advocate for a minute, maybe Apple is not really using Aperture internally because they have so much that they need to keep track of as far as digital assets. They might be using
some kind of enterprise system.
A full-on DAM system,
yep.
Meaning digital asset management system.
Yeah, that's true. That is possible.
And then for that, you end up checking out assets as you need them,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be doing that with Photoshop and InDesign,
mm-hmm.
and so you really don't need to have Aperture for that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and actually, the more I think about it, I bet that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be. It's hard. It's actually hard to know.
Yeah, it's hard to know because no one at Apple is going to tell me.
Right.
So, which is kind of silly because that's exactly the sort of thing that would be really cool to talk about with Apple people, at least for me.
It is, and it's the kind of thing that our listeners and readers would like to hear too, or hear and read. As the case may be.
Well, I'll keep my ear to the ground.
Mostly.
I'll keep my ear to the ground. Maybe someday I'll find someone in Apple that's willing to talk about that stuff. And when they do, I'll share it with all of you.
All right. In the meanwhile, this was released today. You've been running the beta, as you said. And I haven't been, but I will be installing 10.10.3 tonight. And I will start playing with it. Maybe we can revisit it.
I think that sounds great because we've established that I think it's a perfectly fine program and is a nice replacement for iPhoto. I'm curious to see what you think after you get a chance to play with it.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Well, I think we have a show.
I think we do too. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cash Fly. Thanks, Cash Fly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Now I really want to watch Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.